On this week's show, Crafting Impact, the Mavens meet construction with Megan Zimba from Mavens of Manufacturing Podcast.
Construction is the world's oldest industry, but spends the least amount of money on innovation. When we realized people outside the construction industry didn't typically associate construction with technology like virtual reality, apps, and robotics, we started the ConTech Crew. Each week, we bring our listeners the latest in ConTech news and interview the minds behind the technological innovations changing the way we build. So strap in, enjoy the ride, and geek out. It's ConTech Crew time.
All right, we're back. Nathan, welcome to the show.
Oh, man, I am excited to dive into this one. It's always fun to talk to fellow podcasters and see where the conversation goes.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like we've had the conversation before.
A couple times. A little bit of technical difficulties figuring this out, so we've had some practice.
I feel like we're best friends by now.
Right?
We've spent quite a bit more time than the recordings might suggest, right? This is a technology podcast. However, we will admit we've been having some technology issues over time. So we're really excited to possibly get an interview in with Megan. Since we got you going, Megan, introduce yourself a little bit. Tell us, you know, what you're up to now, but then, you know, kind of how you got here.
Yeah, so I'm Megan Zimba. I am the host of Mavens of Manufacturing, but my actual field of profession is an industrial tech writer. So I've been writing for manufacturing and engineering since 2008. I started out in the trade publication industry. I worked with a magazine called Product Design and Development. Unfortunately, that publishing company is no longer around. Most of the people that worked with that publication are now part of IEN, which is Industrial Equipment News. Super cool podcast that they have that talks about industrial equipment. Really funny, really knowledgeable, and they have that sarcastic, dry sense of humor, so I enjoy it very, very much. From there, I tried to go into marketing for a liberal arts college, and it got way too political and way too boring for me. So I ended up coming back to manufacturing and engineering. And I worked with different companies in their marketing departments and really helped them establish their brand stories. So I've worked with an additive manufacturing company, which was really cool. They make the large additive manufacturing platforms, mostly focusing on plastic printing. And then I worked with a bearing company. I've also worked in photochemical etching. So I just really get the engineers to open up and explain what's going on inside their brains, because I feel like engineers are highly intelligent individuals. Most of them don't have the social skills to share their stories. So it's really, really fun to learn from them and understand how their brain works and how they're coming up with some of these concepts. Around 2020, I was married at the time. I had two more kids. So I had three kids altogether. I have one adult child and then two littles. I wanted to stay more at home and have the opportunity to pick my own hours. So I started Z Ink Solutions, which is a writing service company that helps manufacturers establish their content marketing strategy, their social media strategy, and just their brand voice. Then the pandemic hit, right? So went to LinkedIn to kind of keep my sanity. And I was noticing a lot of conversations happening on that platform about some of the major challenges and trends in the industry, but they were all guys. And I was like, hey, you should invite these women onto your platform because they have really cool stories. They have really cool ideas. I think it would add a different angle for your story. And they would be like, yeah, we'll reach out to them. And then they never did. So I said, screw it. I'm going to start Mavens Manufacturing. Fun story behind the name. I noticed that a lot of women in the space were taking the word Maven and applying it to what their field of interest was. And I thought that was really interesting because the general assumption from people who don't like to use dictionaries, they think Maven is actually a female, and it's not. It's actually a connoisseur or an expert. So I was like, oh, this is really cool, because there's a lot of women in the space that are like, I don't understand why I have to be known as a woman manufacturer or a woman engineer. Why can't I just be another engineer that's in the space doing some really cool things? So I took that word, adopted it, put it to manufacturing, and I've interviewed over 180 women in this space. And it's been pretty cool because they're doing some really awesome things. And, you know, they are just really proud of all of the work that they're doing. Some of them are mothers. Some of them are not. Some of them are, you know, shop floor workers. Some are business owners. Some have come from outside industries and really have come and changed the game here. And they've adapted their other skill set from other industries to fit within manufacturing. And it's been a really cool learning experience for me. And it's really great to see more women enter this space. So right now here in the United States, we represent like 30%. That's kind of a vague statistic because when you look at the individual fields, those percentages get less. And when you look at engineering, even on a global view, we're only 13% of the global industry in engineering. So I'm really just trying to inspire other women to get involved in this space because I think we have certain skill sets that men don't have that really can benefit the industry as a whole. And I get really excited because I actually have little girls that watch and listen to Mavens on a weekly basis. There's two in particular that I'm thinking about. They're in Canada. Their hashtag is Junior Board of Directors. And they just love hearing the stories. And their dad is actually part of engineering. And they'll go to him and be like, can we learn this? Can we do welding? Can we do that? And so he helps set them up to experiment with some of the things that these women are talking about. And I'm hoping that they enter the field when they get to that age to start working. So it's been a lot of fun.
The history that you've had coming here, learning the technical side of things, learning how to talk about it, probably gave you that ability to help bring out 180 stories. That's a lot of stories, a lot of interesting people to dig into.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny too, because when I first started out in the industry, when I was interviewing for that trade publication, they were like, well, what's your engineering background? And I'm like, I don't have an engineering background. I'm a writer and I know how to write about tech. And that's my background. And they were like, oh, and I think me being an outsider to the actual space allows me to ask questions that people within the space wouldn't think about asking because you get into that group think, right? So you don't really come up with creative questions that are kind of out of the box. And I think that's really helpful when trying to get the story. So I'm able to combine my creative skills with my tech skills and get that story, which is highly important now because if you look in the United States, we're suffering really bad from a workforce issue right now. So how can we get people really excited about this space? Well, we have to share our stories and make them really exciting because if it's just boring stuff, no one's going to care and they're just going to look somewhere else to go to.
Well, and I feel like there's such a fine line on that, right? And I'm curious to get your thoughts on how you address this because on one hand, you've got jargon, like thing that just is like a very industry specific or kind of niche to that. And then there's like the technical writing and the technical speak that does need to be standardized, right? And like, I feel like depending on who the audience is, sometimes you want to incorporate the jargon because it is more catered to them. But then sometimes if you're trying to reach a broader audience, like do you coach your storytellers on that? Or like how do you balance that?
Yeah, well, and that's the thing, too. And I think we talked about this when we tried this the first time. our industry loves acronyms. Like we love alphabet soup, right, of engineering and manufacturing. And depending on what specific industry you're in, those acronyms might have different meanings to them. So I always like, and I think, again, I think this is where it helps that I'm from outside of the industry because I don't understand all of the jargon myself. So I'm able to say, well, wait a minute, what the heck does that mean? And I kind of go back to that show, The Office, where, you know, Michael Scott was confused on what surplus was. So he was like, explain it to me like I'm five. So I really get the engineers to break it down in the simplest of terms because on average, when you're writing something, you want to keep it at that sixth to eighth grade level, but it just depends too on what kind of content you're writing for. So if you're actually writing for a scientific journal, it's okay to keep that heavy technical jargon within the journal because the audience that you're writing for is going to understand it without any question. But when you're trying to bring brand awareness into the picture, you're hitting everybody in the general public. You know, you might be hitting on people who are nerds for information like me. You might be hitting on somebody who's in eighth grade trying to do a science project or an engineering project. So they're Googling the best way on how to put something together. You really want to keep it at that level of reading because most people are on average at that level. So it's really fun to ask engineers questions like that because sometimes they just look at me like, why don't you know what that means? Like, it's obvious. And it's like, well, it's not obvious to me because I'm not in that space. So I think what makes really good tech writers is they're able to distinguish between the two and they're able to know, okay, this is what this piece of content is for and this is the audience that's going to be reading it. So we have to adjust the words to fit that audience. And it's a skill set that not a lot of people are good at. So I'm happy. Right. Not even ChatGPT is really good at it. So
great. Not yet.
Yeah, not yet, but...
Are you trying to reach the innovators and decision makers in construction technology? Then look no further than sponsoring the ConTech Crew. That's right, we're taking new advertisers. Email us at advertising@theconTechCrew.com to learn more.
No, it's actually an important process in general too, because if you think about it, like, you know, walking up to a group of people and listening to them talk, if you think about that, you're writing that way. If they're all talking in sort of a way that you don't feel comfortable engaging or even feel like you can understand it, you're going to be left on the outside. And that's exactly what we're trying to do because we want to get women into manufacturing. We want to get new and different people in general into construction. Like, yeah, we have to open this thing up and make it approachable. So when we're writing about those things, I've seen this a lot. People are trying to put out marketing and fluff about the industry to bring them in. And I'm like, yeah, it's fluffy what you're writing, but if I didn't know what you were talking about, like if I had to give this to a 5-year-old and read it to them, they'd have no idea. And that's we need to hit them at that 5-year-old level. Not that I believe people are at the 5-year-old level, but we need to talk to kids at that age. You know, lots of studies show a lot of kids by high school have made their decision. We're not going to influence them. We actually literally have to get back down to elementary school and introduce the ideas of what we do for a profession.
Yeah. And I don't know how it is within the construction space because I'm not very involved in that space like you two are. But in manufacturing, there are a lot of people coming out with children's books. So one is Batesville Products. Their marketing person, Mary, is just amazing. She's part of Gen Z. She's a young marketer, and she helped develop a children's book to describe what the foundry industry was. And on their website, they actually have a Kids Corner link where you can click on that, you can get a copy of the children's book. There's coloring pages available. There's science experiments that parents can do with their kids at home. And then she actually goes to schools, and what she does is she melts down chocolate and like has the kids melt down chocolate and put it in these molds. And she's basically teaching the basics of foundry stuff. And the kids are loving it because they get chocolate. And then she hands out free children's books and everything like that. So it's not like giving them all of the nitty gritty details of the industry, but it's introducing them to it in a fun way that's going to make it memorable and want to learn more about it as they grow older. So I think it's really cool that a lot of individuals in the manufacturing space are coming out with specific children's books in the fields that they're expertise in. There's a guy at the high school that I graduated with. He's a certified welder. He used to be in the Navy. He also can like do inspections on welds. So he's the new teacher at the high school. By the time all of his kids graduate from high school, they have some sort of welding certification. So if they want to get a job straight out of high school in welding, they could do that. But he wrote a children's book specifically on welding. So it's super cool. I like it.
I think that's a great example where like the concept that you're teaching can be very complex or very, very nuanced, but yeah. the way that you're teaching it is very simple. And yeah, there are definitely examples in our industry. I know my former employer came out with a sustainable construction children's book, and Brent Darnell cool. has a children's book around emotional health and wellness and things. And so, no, I think that's absolutely, I mean, shoot, you could even argue that these little magnet things that we do with CPC and the CDX is pretty childish in a certain way to make it fun and make it playful. Yeah. Right.
My boys would love that because, I mean, what is it about being young that we forget when we're adults? Like, we were all naturally curious because we're trying to learn how things are figuring, like how things work together. And I'm kind of a lax parent with my boys. So my son, Ronan, loves loud noises, but he also likes to know how things are put together. So for a while, we had to keep glass away from him because he would just take something that's glass and throw it on the ground. Because one, he liked the loud noise, but then he also liked the pattern that came out of it after it shattered. And he was like, can I put it back together? I'm like, no, you're going to cut yourself. That's super cool. Let's do something else. And you can break that's not as dangerous. So, he's obsessed with cars right now. And he wants to build cars and fix cars. And he's only 5 years old. So he's super.
Oh, my gosh.
Just tapping that curiosity. And it's the same for adults. Like, I think, you know, as we get older, we get this sense of, oh, now I got to act more serious, and we lose some of that curiosity. And I'm not saying all of us do, because some of the best inventors to maintain that curiosity and that level of imagination. So I'm really trying to bring that back with these stories, because I think if we can spark something in these younger generations, they will get them really excited and passionate about it. And if we can just build on their confidence, they'll want to pursue it without hesitation. So it's a really exciting time, I think, to be in these types of fields.
Well, it's super exciting time, especially given that idea there, because, you know, Nathan and I have a lot of experience with this as well. You know, Christina Henkai, a good friend of mm-hmm. ours, introduced us to the idea of, you know, needing to play. Like, one of the ways to combat burnout in high performers is by reintroducing play and enjoyment into the process itself. And actually, it creates and sparks a lot of creativity. And that creativity mm-hmm. leads to new inventions, new ideas. It allows you, but it also rejuvenates you. We forget mm-hmm. that these are the ways to rejuvenate. And it'd be really interesting too. Like, this is why we were so excited to bring you on here. It's like, the melding of manufacturing and construction, like, construction is moving towards manufacturing. We need to do more and more things offsite. Like, the labor shortages exist for both of our industries, but it's almost more critical in ours because we can't just put people in the field anymore, and we still need to build those buildings. And so we've got to get into a manufacturing facility. So I would love to get, you know, some of the great minds of both into a room and get them playing with things, and then see if we can make something happen.
Well, and I agree with that, because, you know, being in manufacturing for as long as I've been in manufacturing, I never understood why construction was separate. Like, I never understood that. And I'm like, I don't get this. Like, construction workers are using materials that have been manufactured. So why wouldn't they want to understand, like, the makeup of some of the materials that they're using? Because, you know, strength and durability and tolerance and vibration, all of that stuff matters when it comes to constructing a site. And then when you're trying to fix something or tear something down or build something new, there's a lot of, like, strategy and stuff on how to do that without affecting everybody else that's going around that specific site. Like, you still have to keep the flow of traffic, and they do it overnight sometimes. Like, I'm just like, oh my gosh, how are they doing this? Like, they haven't really, I mean, yes, you know, in Illinois, the ongoing joke, and in Wisconsin, the ongoing joke is, okay, we have winter and then we have construction season, because it's mm-hmm. always like something's coming up. But it's still fascinating to see how they're able to set these things up without really disrupting the flow of traffic. Sometimes it's a hot mess, but most of the time it's really smooth and fluid. Well, and just to see those guys on the bridges that aren't complete, I'm like don't fall. So yeah, I don't understand like why we keep them separate. And Jeff, you and I talked about this before, like now with automation coming into the picture, it's super exciting and really cool to see how they're starting to blend more together. So I don't think they should be kept separate.
Well, and it's really funny because I'm thanks to a good friend and listener friend of ours, Clark Ellis, I'm reading the book, How Big Things Get Done. And just in the opening, they talk about the Empire State Building and the fact that they perceived each floor as a manufacturing line. The difference was the product moved up, not the other way around. The product didn't move through, it moved up. And it was one of the few, I had no idea. Now we do talk about this and I'm pretty careful about this because there a lot of people died on that site. So we have to be more safe than they were. However, in reading about it and listening to it more, it wasn't a matter of like wanton disregard for human life. It was like a lot of the safety things we know and take for granted now on fall protection, et cetera, harnessing, all that didn't really exist at the level it does today. But they had that, mindset, and I didn't even know it. They were ready to open a month before the grand opening. They came in below budget and ahead of schedule.
Wow.
But it's in there. So we actually got away from that for some reason. And I don't know the history, and somebody listening is probably yelling at their windshield right now at us, like, it's because of this. If you have that, let us know. But it needs to come together.
If you think about that, though, with all of the stuff that we know globally that has been built over the last thousands of centuries, it's like even like the Great Pyramids is an example. They didn't have the tools and materials that we have today, yet they were still able to construct these massive structures, and they're still around for us to look at and be in awe of. So I think it's really cool how far we've come. And again, I think if manufacture, like you said, Jeff, if we can just get everybody in the room, just think of the stuff that we could start making. And I like to go back to Star Wars because I'm a freaking Star Wars nerd, but that one planet that's just all city, like we could get to that point maybe someday. I don't know. It's just, it's crazy to think of what we could do in the future if we put our heads together.
Hey, I love Star Wars. And in fact, just a little further plug. That is, by the way, what we do with we do a lot of Lego serious play in workshops, and it is around Star Wars characters playing the roles of construction people. So, that's awesome. and transforming it a little bit. So, we got to get her, Nathan, we've got to get her to one of our workshops. I think, and maybe someday come up with a combined workshop.
And I think
Can I bring my sons? Because they would fall in love with that.
Absolutely.
100%. Yeah, they're definitely invited. And I think the event should hopefully convince you that there is a significant fundamental difference between manufacturing and construction, while there are so many similarities. Mm-hmm. And I think, Jeff, you were hinting on it, of this idea of throughput, or of like a piece that goes through something that is static. That is really what makes manufacturing, right? Like whether it's a car, whether it's a widget or whatever it is, it's going through something that is static, and you're trying to optimize that system for something to go through it. That is profoundly different than building a building, because building a building is taking all those different things and figuring out constructability. So again, like, I don't know if there's a word, manufacturability, or like what word you would use, but constructability is a huge term in our industry, which stands for everything that happens after manufacturing is done. And you have to assemble, and you have to assemble the assembly, and then you have to assemble the assembly on the assembly. And there's all these compounding things of all these different widgets being manufactured. And that science is what makes construction different from manufacturing.
They do have a term, manufacturability.
Okay,
so
interesting.
It's similar to what constructability is, because not everything you engineer can actually be manufactured. So you can engineer something, and this is where a lot of like siloness happens between engineers and their sales team, because the sales team will be like, yeah, we can do that, we can do that. And then an engineering team will be like, You can't do that. The materials will not match up with. So like, it's this constant struggle, but it also helps engineers to be really innovative and like critically think, because if a sales guy sells it, then they have to decide it. So it's kind of like this back and forth.
I hope you've seen that YouTube parody called The Expert. It's just called The Expert. If you ever look it up, it is a total, yeah, please Google it. If you ever never listened to it, anybody out there listening, The Expert. And it's basically like a group of salespeople and an engineer in a room whiteboarding. And they're basically like, okay, I need these three lines to all be parallel yet intersect. Basically, they're asking all these very simplistically contradictory things. And this engineer has to like explain to them that they're just total wackadoos. But you're getting a lot of that. But yeah, but that's regardless of anything that has to do with engineering or any science, where there are people that are trying to sell, because there's the human aspect of it. And then there's like the world, you know, like the reality aspect of it. And we're always, I think, as storytellers, trying to balance the two, right? Because that was one thing I wrote earlier, is I think what we're talking about here is the value of both play and story. And so we talked about play, and Jeff, you said rejuvenation is a lot of like what you get out of the play, and what you get from the story is inspiration or understanding or whatever. And so like, I think, yeah, like more of like, I'm curious how you've really taken the components of a story. Cause that's, as an engineer who's come to learn the value of storytelling through folks like Charlie Dunn and others, like the scientific components of what makes a good story is important. And maybe something for our listeners to understand, like what makes a good story.
Yeah. So, I mean, within manufacturing, a lot of things do get technical. So the human side of it tends to get forgotten. And now there's this big push, especially with automation. So everybody who's in the general public thinks automation is going to take their job. So there's not a really, and I'm not talking about around the world, because there are other regions that are doing better with automation than the United States is. But if you take the dock strikes, for example, they had a lot of signs about robots taking their jobs, and it was really taking some of those people off because they've been working there for 20 plus years. So there is this misconception that, you know, technology is not going to help me make a living. It's actually going to take away, and then I'm going to have to go somewhere else. I might have to uproot my family. So there's a lot of fear in it, where if you can talk to these engineers and be able to add that human element to it, you know, why do we all go to the movies? Like, what is it about the movies that make us sit there for an hour or 2 hours? If it's the Titanic, 3 freaking hours, which probably shouldn't have been the case with that movie. But, you know, you need an element of surprise. You need a hero and a villain. You need a climax. You need that human emotional touch to it. So this is where case studies are really important and testimonials are really important. So you don't want to just brag about everything that you're good at, because your competitor could be doing the same exact thing that you're doing. And what really gets people to buy into your product is that relationship, that trust. So it's almost like being part of a family. And that's what causes brand loyalty as well, too. You have that long-term, deep-rooted relationship with the person that you're buying from. And it all starts with case studies and testimonials, because what do those feature? They feature a problem, then they feature the solution, and then it features the description. Okay, this is the process we took to figure out this problem, and here are the results of it. So we're reducing their downtime by 30% or 40% or 50%. It's that result-driven stuff that's really helping them out. So you have your villain, which is the problem. You have your hero, which is the manufacturer solving that problem. And then you have the emotional turmoil that's happening, because when you have that challenge as a customer, it can really affect like your productivity and how you're serving your customers. And that's not helpful for anyone. So I always tell people, think about your best stories. And then there's all these NDAs, which I think is kind of ridiculous, but there's a way to work around that NDA information. You can be really vague with how you're describing the companies that are helping you. But again, you want to create that excitement. And I always tell companies, pick something that people can relate to, because if it's something that they use on a daily basis, they're going to find it more interesting. So I worked with bearing companies, and they're like, why is anybody going to care about a bearing? Well, what do we use bearings for? We use it in rocket ships. We use it in airplanes. We use it in cars. Without bearings, we wouldn't have any of these things. So what happens if this small tiny baron fails, it could be catastrophic. So touch on those types of things and really get into the reason why these things are important. And I think the same could be applied to construction because, you know, I don't think a lot of people understand the shortage, especially in bridge inspection. And I only knew about bridge inspection because I was writing for a company that was creating the sensors to actually figure out when something was starting to fail in a bridge joint. And that's when I became aware of like the seriousness of bridge inspection and like why we need more people to come in and why we might possibly need to automate some of those services that we're doing with bridges.
Yeah. I mean, you hit a couple of things I want to bring back to you. You talked about the ports and the longshoremen, and I think it would be really interesting because I think they're telling a doomsday story. I think their leadership is leaning into a doomsday story about automation and robotics. Whereas I think, to your point, if that leadership would lean into the stories of how automation and robotics have advanced in the past, they drive an automobile, right? We use trucks, we use cranes to lift those things. Those are all automated tools that have been invented over time to help us get better at offloading the containers from the ships. All these things, if the story is told the right way, and if you're leaning into it and saying, hey, not only are we leaning into this, we're going to understand it and help the process and go alongside of it so that we can protect our workers, make sure that they're being upskilled, make sure that it's improving their lives and their jobs, and that it's actually creating new jobs in the end. And you know, I think they did it to the, that pay more. I mean, that's been the historical path of any automation or any robotics that come into our world. People say, oh, they take our jobs. And I had somebody who told me on YouTube the other day that I'm full of it for what I said, and I will double down on it. Robots don't take jobs. They take the lowest job we don't want to do and allow people to move up into higher quality, higher pay, higher value jobs, as long as you lean into it. And I think storytellers like you and others could do a really good job of teaching them. By the way, and this is the other thing I've said over and over, the difference between disruption and transformation. Disruption happens to you. It's the change that happens to you. Transformation is the change you lean into and understand and play a role in. That's the only difference.
I love that, Jeff. Yeah, the difference is story, right? The only difference between transformation and disruption is the story that you're telling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And as manufacturer, like, because I saw a lot of these posts on LinkedIn regarding those dock strikes, and I was getting a little frustrated with the people who were posting them because I was like, you guys are talking like groupthink. You're talking like you're from the industry, which is totally fine. Yes, we understand what the benefits are of these technologies and these systems. But if you're part of the general public who is maybe part of the baby boomer generation or Gen X generation, not everybody went into something that's technologically focused. Not everybody went to a vo-tech school or a four-year college and understand some of these concepts that we're working with. They went straight to the workforce and maybe picked one of those dirty, dangerous jobs, and they've been working in that type of environment for the last 30 or 40 plus years because what they were doing was trying to provide for their families. So they didn't really care about everything else that's been happening in the outside world because their priority was, I need to work so I can provide for my family and have the life that I want to work. Now you're bringing this technology into it and you're not really explaining to them what the benefits are or how you're going to help them upskill. And not everybody at that age wants to learn a new skill set. Not everybody, because in their mind, they're thinking, okay, if this is technology focused and I don't have that skill set, I'm going to have to go back to school and understand it, which is going to cost money, which is going to take money away from my family or my personal life that I want to pursue. So we have to do a better, like you said, Jeff, do a better job connecting the dots for them. We can't just assume, well, it's easy and you just have to do this, because on the outside, it's not that easy. Like, they wouldn't understand it.
And that was my same problem with the people is that, hey, leadership, like, you can't just say no to this. You can't just try to say no and throw it into a contract. You have to lean into it and say, we want to have a role in managing this, and we want to have a say in it. And by the way, turn to those people and say, listen, we're here for you. We're going to help play a role in this. And by the way, not all of this is going to happen overnight anyway. So a lot of those people are going to continue to have their jobs and age out, and others are going to be able to continue to, you know, train and learn. And you hit it, Megan. I'm going to give a Clark Ellis again here. Clark, you get two plugs today. Is that, you know, one of the things you have to understand too when telling the stories or bringing these things in is that everybody feels stupid learning something new. And he said, somebody gave him the best piece of advice is the best way to be ready to learn something new is to be comfortable feeling stupid. You're not stupid, right? It's that it's a completely new thing. And it's our jobs as trainers, as technology people, as writers to help them and be empathetic. Yeah, it sucks to feel stupid. You know what's great is I can tell you, if you take me to your construction site and you show me how you're pouring concrete and how you're doing framing or how you're doing electrical, I'm going to feel really stupid. And it's good that it's a comfortable place to be. So we have to do that. But then we also have to provide them leadership. That's what got me is you're trying to just say no to something. You know what you're creating is an opportunity for someone to come along. And then, yeah, that person who's feeding their family, they may not have a job. If, I mean, I don't know that in the longshore thing that, you know, you can have open shop ports, but it's possible. You know, somebody's going to say, hey, I'm going to do it faster and better. Yeah. Or you can say, we're going to do it faster and better, but we're going to lean into and make sure our people are taken care of.
Yeah. I think that's why I like smaller companies over big corporations sometimes, because smaller companies understand that human connection and that human intimacy, where larger corporations, they just want to do things faster and high quality because they're trying to hit a certain set of numbers. And you really, with all these advancements in technologies, you really can't forget that human factor anymore. You have to be willing to work with all of the generations across the board, because I think we're at a period now where we have more different generations in the workforce than ever before. Mm-hmm. And they all have different values, and they all have different things that motivate them and their work ethic. It's not the same across the board, and you really need to consider that when trying to introduce some of these newer technologies.
Well, and I think really what we're hitting on in all this as I'm listening is, what is the role that fear plays as this sort of emotional driver in decisions, whether to do something or not to do something, right? And so I think you've got folks on one end saying, like, this is what I'm afraid will happen if we do this thing. But how often do we as technologists sell, well, but what should you be afraid of if you don't do this thing? Like, that we're playing out all of these fear sides, if those are, you know, if they're going to be motivated by fear as opposed to opportunity, that, you know, those of us that always want to be euphoric and always look at the upsides, like, well, no, sometimes maybe we do need to talk about, as uncomfortable as it is, the negative sides of it, but actually use that as a motivator to do the right thing.
Yeah. Well, and that's why I encourage anybody who's telling their story to be as authentic and transparent as you possibly can. So don't just share all of your success stories either. Share your failures, because it proves that you're willing to learn from your mistakes and take accountability, which also establishes trust with the relationships you're trying to build. So you don't want to just be like, it's like the marketing fluff that you mentioned earlier, Jeff, where it's like, this is amazing. We have all these amazing features and it's all fireworks and sparkly and this. No, you want to show that you've made a mistake along your journey. And, you know, I think with executives too, we don't really see a lot of their stories on LinkedIn. Like, there's some that are really good at sharing their points of view and their learnings and understandings. And I think we need that as well from leadership. Like, where did your journey start and how did you get to the point where you're at? Because it shows the passion that kept them driving forward and progressing forward. And there's a lot of great leaders out there who are doing some amazing things for their companies. And I just think that's important in sharing your story as well. You want to show every level of your workforce, because it just shows that your whole work culture and how you guys work together as a team to really produce some of these successful concepts.
Yeah, it really shows. And I'm going to connect your beginning to your end there. You talked about having the villain. The villain is the fear, and you need, and it's, and you know, some of the reading is it's like salt in when you're putting salt in the recipe, right? Every recipe needs salt. Even cookies get a little bit of salt, but yeah. Too much salt and it doesn't taste good. Too little salt and it doesn't taste good. So it's right. Just the right amount of salt to get people motivated. And right. That's the key. So Megan, I think we could go on forever. I actually, yeah. I think there's some more mashups in our future. I know, you know, you follow a couple other folks that I'm going to go out and take a listen to. So tell people where to go listen to what you're doing, catch up with what you're doing. And thank you so much for sitting down with us today.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, because I'm serious about learning more about construction, because I think it's a great opportunity for more women to get involved. So if we can definitely collaborate on doing that, that'd be awesome. My main channel is LinkedIn, so feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn. But for my video series is for Mavens. You can actually go to YouTube. It's Mavens of Manufacturing, and you can see all of the women that I interviewed. I am on Spotify and all of the main podcast channels. I'm just really horrible at updating those right away. So if you want the most updated stories, go on YouTube. But I am available on Spotify, iHeart, and the rest of the podcast world. So
that's awesome. That is so awesome. Thank you so much. I encourage everybody to go out there and check it out. And thanks for persevering through. We'll have a good laugh down the road that we finally got through it.
Right.
Yeah. Thank you so much, you guys. It was a lot of fun.
And thank you for tuning in today to Geek Out for our interview with Megan Zimba. To read all our news stories, learn more about our guests, and to listen to the show, visit thecontentcrew.com. This is The Content Crew signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride and geek out.